This show furnished by Key Light Counseling Center.
Are you looking for an alternative to drug and alcohol rehabilitation that allows you to recover in the privacy of your own home with an individualized program that meets your specific needs? Concierge Detox LA can be that alternative. Headed by medical addiction specialist Dr. Damon Raskin and clinical psychologist Dr. Howard Gluss, Concierge Detox LA will design an individualized program to meet your recovery needs. For more information, contact Concierge Detox LA at 323-935-9712.
You're listening to The Shrink and the Showman with Dr. G.
I'm Dr. G, and we're here with The Shrink and the Showman. And I'm very excited to have the British sensation. I'm just going to call him that. The UK pop sensation. The titles just go on and on. His name is Chesney Hawkes. And as I like to call him, just Chesney or Chesney. Because as my friends from the UK said, oh, you're having Chesney Hawkes on. That's very posh.
Posh. That's an interesting way of describing me.
So how would you describe yourself?
Well, certainly not posh. Although it's funny. It may have come from the fact that I was born in Windsor, which is where the Queen comes from, darling.
Oh, okay.
So it's where the Queen lives. So maybe
posh by association.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I don't think I'm posh, really.
Well, I think you're much more down to earth, but maybe they were saying I was posh.
And maybe that was it.
Understood it. But Chesney Hawkes, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Howard. This is great.
Oh, great. As I said, you are sort of a UK sensation, an actor, producer, and philanthropist for A21. And we're going to find out for other organizations, too, that you're involved with charity organizations. We have lots of time to talk. I do want to give our number out to our audience. The number is 1-800-222-5222. That's 1-800-222-5222. If you want to ask me any questions or Chesney any questions, we'd love to hear your questions
bring
and your
on.
Thoughts.
Bring it on.
Just bring them on, exactly. So I want to, you know, something that interests me a lot as a psychologist is how people deal with success, especially when people get success at a very young age. And you had a hit song called The One and Only that was a huge success when you were 19 years old, right?
Yeah, I was
just
very
like
young.
5 years ago, right?
Yeah. Not long ago at all. Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you could share that experience with our audience and also comment about, you know, what it felt like to have such a big success so early on in life.
Yeah, well, I grew up in a very rock and roll household. My dad was a bit of a pop star himself. He was in a band called the Tremolos that had quite a lot of success in the 60s. So I grew up with all my dad's friends were 60s superstars, like Jerry from Jerry and the Pacemakers. And,
oh, wow. Okay. Well,
yeah, so that was kind
Ringo
of...
Ringo from the Beatles?
Yeah, I've never heard of him.
Never heard of him. You should Google him.
Should check them out.
Google him.
Yeah. Have you seen that film yesterday where about the guy who he bangs his head and then suddenly nobody's ever heard of the Beatles? Have you heard that?
I've heard such good things about the film. I haven't had a
chance.
Yeah,
it's a great idea.
It's such a great idea.
Yeah. So,
because, you know, the sequel's going to be someone bangs their head and they don't know who Chesney Hawkes is.
Well, that would never happen, surely. Your audience need educating, really. But
yeah, we're going to educate the American audience about you.
Sorry, going back, we're diverse there.
No, that's good.
Well, because I had that kind of background, that kind of upbringing, I was singing since I was a baby. And, you know, I'd seen that kind of success and, you know, also seen the, you know, music around all the time. That when it actually came for my turn to, I guess, step up, as it were, it felt natural, you know. But having said that, it changes everything. When you have some kind of, any kind of success or fame, you know, very quickly realize that you can't kind of do normal things in life. You can't just walk, you can't even walk out of your front door without, you know.
So I think what, even though you had that, which is great, so you had some sort of baseline, so it wasn't a total shock, but then again, your life becomes somebody else's life.
Yes, it's not your own.
It's not your own, yeah.
Exactly the right turn of phrase. It's, I mean, especially when you're, you know, caught up in what I would call the machine. I used to get up and, you know, I didn't know where I was going that day. And I'd be like, what's happening today? Oh, you're going to Sweden for a TV show. You're going to Germany for a radio show. Then you're coming back here because you've got a gig in London. Like, okay, great. Let's do it.
Let's do it. The next day, it's like, where am I going the next day?
Exactly.
You know, so I want to take a caller on. His name is Stephen, and he's calling from Culver City. So I want to welcome him to the show. Stephen, it's a pleasure to have you on, and we'd love to hear what you'd have to say.
Thank you so much for taking my call. So I'm in a band, and we've been rocking it out for a while, but haven't really been going anywhere. And I know, like, a long time ago, people used to go to England, and they'd get discovered there. I know, like, Jimi Hendrix and, you know, different people. And then, you know, people come to L.A., or they went to Seattle during the 90s. Like, where would be the place now? Because I was thinking, you know, I was talking to my band, like, maybe we should do a tour in England or Europe or something. Like,
So Stephen, is your question, do you think that England might be a good place to start or to get your tour?
My answer to that is yes, but so would LA be. And, you know, these days, you know, I mean, when I first started, it really was about, you know, where you gig and getting that elusive record deal. But these days, you know, waiter at Starbucks or whatever has their music up on Spotify. So, you know, it's about being, you know, creative with how you do it. Obviously, it's important to play live and obviously, you know, to get out there and to learn your craft. But, I mean, I don't know.
So geographically, maybe it's not as important anymore.
I don't think it is. Yeah. I don't think it's going to hurt you. It's going to, it might dent your pocketbook a little bit going to England. But of course,
the pound is down right now, so it's a good time to go.
That's true. But there are great gigs, you know, all over England. But there are great gigs all over the United States as well. You know, I mean, I remember in the 90s, I actually came here to do it. So, you know, it's wherever you're not, I guess, that seems like the kind of the holy grail of where to go.
And I wonder if you could comment to this about to Stephen, too. How has online presence changed the industry as far as, let's say, like you said, where you are physically versus having a presence online and social media?
Well, I think, you know, obviously the internet has changed everything. And when I first started putting records out, it didn't exist. It wasn't there. That platform wasn't there for you. I think it has opened up a lot of opportunities for young artists, especially those that want that have that kind of idea of creation of an image. Because you've got it right there at your fingertips. You know, I mean, I know that the competition is huge. And obviously, as I said, your waiter up the road has got his music on.
Because he could be, especially here in LA, he could be your waiter today and he could be a huge hit.
And
it happens all the time.
It happens all the time. And everybody's looking for that, you know, that moment, that break, whatever it is, whether it's a viral video or it's the right ears at the right gig at the right time, that little bit of fairy dust, that little bit of luck, that everything comes together you know, and there you go, you have your break.
You know, Stephen, were we able to answer your question?
Okay.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Stephen. Thanks for asking that. And you bring up an important thing, because when it comes to success, it's always interesting to me, again, as a psychologist, how much is our responsibility when we're trying to create our success? And I don't mean exact numbers. And how much is, you know, the luck of the draw and timing? Well, and I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I always said that I never had a backup plan. Whenever anyone asked me advice on how do I do it, what do I do? I said I never had a backup plan, because if you do, I feel like there's always this kind of part of you that said, well, if that doesn't work, I've always got this to fall back on. It's the drive. It's the passion for it. You know, never do something that you don't have passion for.
If you're in the arts.
Yeah, especially in the arts. Yeah, I mean, I really think it's important. I don't think I would have made it if I didn't have that.
But you also had a family that was in the arts. So I think my guess and my assumption is that it was much more sort of accepted that you would go into the arts.
No, it's true. We were never going to become accountants. My brother and sister and I are all in the music industry, you know. It was a very rock and roll atmosphere as we're growing up, for sure.
So having that world and being familiar with it probably made it easier for you on some level. But on another level, you also knew that you had to sort of prove yourself.
Yeah, no,
you really were the musician that everyone knows you are now.
Absolutely. I mean, there was pressure there because my dad had a lot of success. And he's a rock star. He's a proper rock star.
So, right. So when kids were at school and said, what does your dad do? Oh, he's an accountant. What does your dad do? He's a rock star.
It's true, yeah. It's a hard one to live up to.
Yeah. But living up to it, I think, is really about being yourself. That's what we talked about before we got on the show, about being authentic and finding ways to express yourself through your work.
Yeah, it's finding your truth. People, especially when you're in the arts and you're trying to put out, you know, some kind of content, if it doesn't have your truth, you know, within it at its core, I think people see through it.
But here's an interesting dilemma I've experienced from patients too. If you're assigned, let's say you get a job and you're assigned to sing a certain song a certain way.
Yeah, sure.
So the truth isn't necessarily dependent on your truth, but on what you've been given.
But it's what you can bring to them, to that role, whatever that is.
That's exactly what I was thinking too. That's what I wanted our audience to hear. You can find your truth within a structure.
You can. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to be involved in a lot of musical theatre over the years and starred in, you know, all sorts of great productions.
And I know you have a great production going on right now, right?
Well, I'm writing a musical at the moment.
Well, why don't you share that with our audience before we take a break? And again, our number is 1-800-222-5222. That's 1-800-222-5222. If you want to talk to Chesney Hawkes, or Chesney, as he's known in England, or just Chesney, he'd love to hear from you. So you were going to tell us about your musical.
Yeah, I mean, I've been involved in musical theatre quite a lot over the last 15, 20 years. And I'm a songwriter, and it's something that I thought that I might fall into at some point. And so I've started this project, which was loosely based on my own life, actually. It started very autobiographical. But then as these things, you know, move on, it kind of changes and it becomes its own beast, as it were.
I think that's a good thing to happen, that it changes and becomes its own beast. Like, you have a starting point and then you let it evolve.
Yeah. I almost
just
feel
like our lives.
Yeah, just like our lives. I mean, they have a life of their own. You know, there's certain things that are going to
happen regardless of whether we want them to or have any control over it. Yeah. We're going to go to commercial break, but when we get back, we're going to talk about your musical theater project. I'm Dr. G. I'm here with The Shrink and the Showman. We'll be back right after the commercials.
You're listening to The Shrink and the Showman with Dr. G.
I'm Dr. G, and we're here with The Shrink and the Showman. And tonight, the showman is Chesney Hawkes. He's a UK pop sensation, an actor, producer, philanthropist for A21 and many other organizations. And as I've been making fun of him all night tonight, we're just going to call him Chesney the Star.
Just the Star would do.
Just the Star. Yeah. Right. We'll just call you Star.
Star. How about that? Make it
Star.
Easy.
British Star.
Yes. I like it.
Before the break, we were talking about your career, and you were starting to talk about your work in musical theater. So I'm wondering if you can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I just starred in a production of Godspell. I don't know if you know the Stephen Schwartz.
Oh, yeah. I actually know Stephen Schwartz.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful. Well, he actually sent us a lovely letter.
I've had him on the show.
Oh, you have? That's amazing. Oh, what a legend.
Yes, incredible.
Yeah.
On an older show I did, but...
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, I'm a huge fan.
Just a very quick little throw. I remember when I had him on, I used to have a show in Phoenix, and when I had him on there, and we were talking about... Wicked.
Yes.
And I was doing all this psychological analysis of the characters. He goes, well, I just thought they were munchkins.
Yeah, exactly.
And witches. I never realized all this other stuff.
He doesn't look too deep. It's just,
exactly. But he's a fantastic guy.
But though, this was a wonderful experience, actually, because I travel a lot. I'm always away. We live here in LA, my wife and three kids, and I'm always traveling. So my son, who was 18, he got a part in it. So I was playing Jesus, and he was one of my disciples. So I still got to tell him what to do.
Right. It was perfect casting, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So to have him with me on stage and with me in England for that whole time was just, it was just magical, you know?
How did it feel to have that father-son bond, especially with a career? Because you had a very similar experience with your father.
Yeah, I felt like it was quite a full circle experience for me, because my dad obviously, you know, was a singer, and that's how I ended up doing. And now here's my son. It's like three generations all doing the same thing. So it was just amazing. And also just the experience of seeing him in his first ever production. You know, there was a moment where I was standing on stage with a guitar, you know, and I'd look around and he had his solo, and here he was surrounded by all of the cast and doing genius thing. I thought it was a welling up moment, you know.
Did you just want to turn to the audience and go, that's my son.
That's my boy.
That's my boy. Exactly. Our number here is 1-800-222-5222. Again, that's 1-800-222-5222. We're talking to Chesney Hawks, and we have a caller, and her name is Henrietta. Oh. And she has a question for you, so we're going to find out what it is.
Hi, Henrietta.
Hi, Henrietta. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Yes, I do have a question, and mine is, what is the most outrageous thing or experience that you've ever had while you were in your heyday and on tour?
And tell us the truth.
I thought you said this was a family show. I'm not sure I can get away with a lot of things.
Well, yeah. So we'll have to wait. That one, actually, Henrietta, you can email us and we'll tell you
I'll give you the truth.
Yes,
the honesty. Oh, I had many amazing experiences back in those days. I mean, it really was like being in the eye of a storm. So, you know, just crazy, crazy life, you know. They were always, you know, pockets of girls kind of, you know, parked outside everywhere, and they always seemed to know where I was going and stuff. But as far as touring, I once toured with Brian...
You jumped off that girl thing pretty quickly.
I did, pretty quick, yeah. I didn't want to embarrass Henrietta there. But so, touring-wise, I toured with Brian Adams once in stadiums around Europe, and that was absolutely amazing, which is just incredible experiences, you know. So just meeting great people.
In what respect? Like, share one of the experiences that comes to mind.
And I remember playing at... In Austria at the Vienna Stadium, the lineup was Extreme. Do you remember that band Extreme?
Yes.
So they were on, and then it was me, and then it was Brian Adams, and I went on, and I'd never played a stadium before, and I was only 19 years old, and to walk on stage in front of 80,000 people, just, you know, with the sun coming down, and just, it was just the most incredible experience. I, you know, you really do feel that energy when you walk out onto a stage like that.
Do you feel that it almost takes you to another place?
It does. Yeah, it really does. Obviously, you get, you're nervous, you know, just before coming out, something like that. But then when you get out there and you feel that kind of energy
that
from
rush.
The crowd, and they rush, and it just you feel like you're one with the crowd almost, you know, and it's like we're all in this together, you know.
Yeah, I've heard that from other musicians, especially that have played big stadiums, the sense of aliveness that they experience and the rush is really tremendous. It's like,
but then going back to
you still haven't told us the craziest experience. You're not off the hook. We have to give Henrietta what she wants.
Oh goodness me, oh god. Well, I'll tell you a couple of crazy things. When I used to, back then, obviously I still live with my parents. I was 18-19 years old.
Okay.
And there was one girl who my mum was so nice. She used to kind of, they'd come and knock on the door sometimes, and she answered the door, and they said, this girl said, can I use your toilet? So she's like, okay. I guess so. I'm not going to say no to a young girl. So let her in. And apparently she stole a roll of toilet paper and was selling it off, like, you know, a pound a sheet.
Well, that's when you know you really made it, right, Chesney? When someone's selling your toilet paper.
I know. It's funny.
Well, Henrietta, have we been able to answer your question? And I do want to give you my email address, Henrietta. It is drhowardgluss@live.com. So if you want to mail me... And we can actually tell you the real story that we can't tell. We'd be happy to do that.
Yes, I'd appreciate that very much. Thank you so much. It's been exquisite talking to you both.
It's been wonderful
for you
to call in. And you also started to tell us that you're writing a musical. So I'm wondering, how is that creative experience different than, let's say, writing songs?
Well,
I mean, writing like a pop song
versus
a musical.
It opens up all sorts of different avenues. Songwriting, you know, pop songwriting has certain boxes that, you know,
you've got like
verse, chorus, middle eight. We call it middle eight. You call it bridge.
Okay.
Hey, let's call the whole thing off. And so, you know, there are certain parameters to write in a pop song. It's 3 minutes as well, you know, so that's the way it is. So with the songwriting for a musical, it, you know, we try and follow a narrative with the lyrics, which for a start helps. And, you know, story songwriting, obviously, you do that in country and in some pop stuff. But
that's what I was thinking. Like, country music is telling a story in a few minutes.
Yeah.
Musical theatre is telling a story in 2 hours.
Yes, yeah, exactly. But you can also do really fun things with the music. You know, you can you change the time signature. You can speed up and slow down, and you can come back and you can reprise things and, you know, come back to a theme, and you know, it's like there's more to it.
There's more creative freedom.
Yeah, you have a lot more freedom to it. Yeah, definitely.
So, what is this musical about? The new one? And
well, it started.
Can you share it?
Well, I can't tell you too much about it, but you know,
is there a part for me?
Of course, there is. Well, certainly now.
The psychologist that comes in to do therapy on all the actors on stage.
We all need you, Howard. Yeah, we all need you.
But you know, I'm only a psychologist on the radio. No, I'm just joking. I am a licensed clinical psychologist. Right.
So it's not like that one of the things. I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV.
I'm a doctor and I play one on the radio, and I am a doctor in both. So can you give us some hints?
Yeah, as I said before, it's vaguely autobiographical in that it's about a young guy who has a big hit at an early age, and how he deals with it. Funny enough, all these questions that you were asking me,
right,
how he dealt with it, and he, you know, our character kind of followed the shiny pebble and left his family and his love behind, and it's about how he comes back to his home and his love and his family, and it's set in two time zones, so like from 1991 and then in 2014. So you get to see the older, the young guy, and the guy would be more like I am now,
right,
and how time has affected him and these choices in life has affected him.
So since it's semi-autobiographical, how has time affected you? Let's say, you know, in your choices, you have a family, you have three children, right?
Yeah.
So I'm curious how that's, you know, how your career has affected you.
Well, you know, when I was young, I think that it was all, everything was music for me. It was all about making it, and it was all about drive and all about how can I do it? How can I make it? And of course, you know, as you get older, those things, they're still important. They're still very important. But you know,
they're different.
It's a different kind of thing. And you know, and I don't feel like I had the creative side of things on my terms back then. Although I enjoyed every moment of it and it was great fun, I was restricted in a way.
By yourself, or do you think that you were self-restricted?
No, I don't.
In the way that, let me just ask you this.
Yeah.
In the way that, you know, a lot of younger people that I've experienced, they get this sense of, I have to do what people think I'm supposed to do.
No, that's a good question. And I think that is definitely part of it. When you're young and you have success like that, there are obviously older people that are in control of your career. And they, you know, give you ideas of what you're supposed to do, or not just ideas, they tell you what you're doing. You know?
Right. So, young and you want to make it.
Young and impressionable.
Impressionable, exactly.
And you feel like, oh, well, that's what I have to do, then I guess I'll have to do it. But obviously, as time's gone on, you know, it's much more important to me to have, you know, control over what I creatively put out. So
we're going to stop for a break in a minute, but I definitely want to talk about more about this when we get back. But to share a funny little anecdotal story, it happens in a lot of fields. When I first became a psychologist, I was trying so hard to be the psychologist I thought I was supposed to be. And I had a supervisor, and I was presenting this case, and I was being very clinical, and then he turned to me and said, "Do you want a pipe and a sweater?" I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "You're trying to be a psychologist. People are in your office to try to figure out how to be themselves." He said, "Just relax and be yourself."
Yeah.
And that was such an important lesson. But that is such a hard thing
to do. It's a hard thing to do as a young person, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm Dr. G. We're going to be back right after the commercials.
To The Shrink and the Showman with Dr. G.
I'm Dr. G, and we're here with The Shrink and the Showman. Tonight, our showman is Chesney Hawks. You may know him as just Chesney.
The star.
Chesney Hawks, star. UK pop sensation, actor, producer, philanthropist, and father.
And dad.
And dad. So that's an important... And husband.
Yes. Yeah.
When we were talking at the break, you mentioned something that I want to share with our audience, because people throw out these concepts all the time of just be yourself, just be yourself. And I remember when people say that to me, I used to get so confused because I thought, well, which self? Like, what exactly do they mean? And then you said to me, it can be painful. Yeah. So I'm going to pay shrink right now.
This is why
put
we're
you
here.
On the couch. Don't run out. The door's locked.
I think in my journey into my kind of own self-discovery, as it were, has been, you said earlier on that when people say, you know, just be yourself, and you're like, well, I don't really know what that is, you know.
Right. So, or it changes.
Or it can change. I honestly believe that none of us really have delved into who we actually are. You know, there's that kind of persona that we put on, and many personas, I think, depending on who we're talking to or who we're engaging with. But you want to get to know who you are to yourself, and that's the most important thing. It's like is finding out yourself who you are. It's like, it's all very well telling people who you are, but you're not really talking to yourself.
Okay, that's interesting. So, well, let me add something before I get into that. I was thinking, when I think of that, I feel like I have a certain baseline, like a sense of who I am. And so I might interpret different situations that require me to be a certain way based on that baseline, you know, sort of that sense of
self.
But
what is the baseline for you? Is it what you do?
Is it what I do or who I am? I think it's who I am.
Yeah.
And then what I do is, it's a great question, gets reflected in who I am.
Right.
But also what I do can also create the who I am, if that makes sense.
But do you think that maybe, you know, as you go through life and you experience things, some painful things, that if you don't go back and deal with those things or at least talk about them or even just acknowledge them, then you're never really kind of, it doesn't help you in future life if you don't go back and deal with these things.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, because the thing is, they're already in your psyche. Mm. So they're there whether you choose to deal with them or not. If there's a trauma, it's affected you. Mm. The best way to deal with the trauma is to get the help you need and be able to process through it in many different ways. And sometimes, depending on the trauma, it could take many years to be able to completely understand the full impact, but it is going to color you, it is going to change you, and make you a different person. And maybe you'll get to be a better person. That's the hope with it. You'll have a deeper understanding. You know, let's say Holocaust survivors, they may have that have been able to process through it. They may have a deeper understanding of suffering and what the human condition is, and have a greater appreciation for life. That would be the upside of it, but it's going to take years to get to that place.
Yeah, and I think that you find we've all had stuff that
everyone
has.
If you live long enough, you've had something.
You've got things that you haven't dealt with, and in my experience, I hadn't realized that certain behaviors that I had been doing with my friends and family, saying things, whatever. I didn't realize it was because of X, Y, and Z. I had no idea until I had been through some professional help, and got to the details of what it was and why I was behaving like that. And once you realize, and you can kind of cross out those things, or at least realize that's why you were doing that, it's hugely beneficial for me anyway. I felt elated almost by it, because then you kind of have a reason for that, and then you can work with yourself and try to kind of go past that.
I think one of the great things that therapy can do, and I try to explain this to clients, is we behave a lot of time based on past experiences, whether we like to acknowledge
admit
that or
it
not.
Or acknowledge it.
Yeah. Our childhoods can have a very strong effect on us. Also, our biology, our genetics, etc. You put it all together. But if we can find a way to process through that with the help of someone who's on the outside, who's subjectively looking at you.
Yes.
People say, well, I can do it on my own. I go, yeah, to an extent, but you know what? You can't do surgery on your own. Mm. You need to have someone you trust that can look at you and say, hey, Chesney, have you thought of this or that?
Yeah.
And someone that's trained to look at the patterns, because people repeat the patterns over and over again, and then they repeat it with someone else.
Yes.
So I'm thinking of a situation where someone was paranoid because someone at a very young age took advantage of them and, you know, did a number on them.
Mm.
And now I feel like this person in business, everybody that comes in that he doesn't, but he's always, he's the one now doing the number on other people.
Right.
So he's repeating that pattern. So every situation seems to end up either he's in court or something.
Yeah.
And to have that insight.
To realize that the reason that that happened is because of this, what happened to you when you were younger and you were reacting.
And then what we're working for is free will, that you actually go, oh, I have choices.
No, I'm an absolute huge fan of any kind of therapy in that way. We actually do the therapy as a family.
Oh, that's fantastic.
All five of us. And it's been so beneficial for all of us.
And I appreciate you sharing that, because some people sometimes have shame around that. And
yeah, it's true. I mean, especially from where I come from. I mean, it's like stiff upper lip. I mean, no. If I said I'd been to a therapist to a lot of my friends in England, they'd be like, well, what's the matter?
You're crazy? You're mad? Yeah, you're mad. Well, this is California, so good.
California's driven me crazy, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Here it's a requirement, you know, when you come in.
I think in New York it's definitely a requirement.
Yeah, definitely in New York and in L.A. on the coast. How do you think the therapy, let's say the work you've done, your self-exploration, has affected you as an artist?
Well, that's a great question, and something I can answer kind of very, you know, because it's new.
Okay.
this whole experience here of therapy has really only happened over the last few years. And I'm working on an album now. And as far as my songwriting goes, I mean, I've done a lot of different types of songwriting, you know, writing for projects, writing for paint-by-numbers pop songs and stuff like that, you know.
Right.
And these days, when I'm writing a song, it's like it comes from within. I don't know what it is about it. It's been cathartic. I've written songs about my dad, you know, just stuff that had happened
stuff
in the past.
Stuff that you're talking about in therapy.
Absolutely. It's all come out. And because I've talked about it in therapy, and because it's all come out, and because I'm dealing with it, it's there in the forefront. So I'm writing about it, and it's like another step to my therapy almost.
No, I think, you know, we have a mutual friend, Lynn Ferguson, and she talks a lot about storytelling and narrative work, that our storytelling is within ourselves, but it's also a lot of times about what we write about or put within characters.
Yeah, Lynn's an incredible person.
No, so let's give a shout out to Lynn together.
Let's do that. We could do a whole show about Lynn. Hi, Lynn. We love you.
Lynn Ferguson, we love you. She's been on the show. And
that's why I'm here, I think.
Yes, you are. And I want to actually, let me give her a shout out for anyone who's out there that wants to learn how to tell their own truth and their own story. They should contact Lynn Ferguson. I don't have her phone number on me.
But if you go to youtellyours.com.
That's it. Youtellyours.com. You can find out some more information about Lynn. And
we've both been through the storytelling with Lynn, haven't we?
Can you tell? I also want to mention one of our sponsors. Their name is Sand and Shores PR. And they tell your story in a powerful, effective way. And the person who's doing it, her name is Tanya McKenzie. She reminds me a lot of Lynn. She does it in a business sense. Is she takes your story and then brands you a certain way and creates your PR around it. And I have found that she's extremely effective.
She sounds amazing.
No, she's amazing. And her company is called Sand and Shores. She's a master at messaging. If you want to find out more information about her, her number is 424-262-1920. That's 424-262-1920. And that's Tanya McKenzie at Sand and Shores.
Wow, she sounds great.
No, she is great. So what other projects are you working on right now that you'd like to share with our audience?
Well, I mean, I just briefly brushed on it just now. I'm writing a new album. And so that hopefully will be out early next year. And it's full of just my life. It really is. It's the most personal work I think I've ever done.
I can't wait to does it have a name or a title yet? Or?
Well, no, I'm working on all sorts of different titles. There's lots of potentials, which is a good thing, I guess. But
I think that's a good thing, actually.
Yeah.
It's probably better off if you just let it evolve and you'll know the title once you're done with the album.
It's true. I think I have all the songs pretty much for the album. And normally with when you're looking for an album title, you look at the song titles, and if one of them stands out as a title for an album, then you go with that. But none of them are for me at the moment. So I'm now.
You haven't gotten that click yet.
No, I haven't. I haven't got that. And
it does come.
I've been looking through the lyrics, and maybe there's a lyric in there that might turn. But then, as I said, you know, it's such a personal record that I almost feel like it needs a title that is not, you know, from the songs. It needs to be something that comes from me, you know, something within.
I have a good idea for it. How about the Dr. G show?
About Howard Says.
Howard Says. Okay, Chesney, we're going to take a quick break. Our number here is 1-800-222-5222. By the way, I really like your concept. That's how I would work it, too, about letting the title just come to you instead of inventing it.
It's going to be more organic.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe I should call it the Lost Elvis Tapes. Then it would sell.
Okay, we'll be back right after the commercials.
You're listening to The Shrink and the Showman with Dr. G.
I'm Dr. G, and we're here with The Shrink and the Showman. Our showman tonight is, what is your name again? Chesney Hawks?
That's right, yes.
Or just, because now I look at you and I just think star.
Perfect. That's what I go by from now on.
Star.
I changed my name as soon as you said it, yeah.
Just like Prince's.
Yeah, exactly.
You were.
No, just star.
Our number is 1-800-222-5222. That's 1-800-222-5222. And you brought me a CD.
I brought you a present.
I'm actually really honored, and it's called Real Life Love. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, this was my latest album. It's funny, my wife always tells me, I always say that it's my new album, but I can't call it my new album anymore because it's probably 6 years old. So okay. I've changed that to latest album. So,
my last production I did, my newest production, it was 1987. I know.
Yeah. So, it's a collection of songs that I wrote around that concept of
real life love.
Exactly. And so that one actually, as we were talking about titles, that is the title of the song on the album, so it was just absolutely perfect for the title of the album.
And it sounds like it's actually perfect about what you're going through right now.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
But I've already used it, though, so I can't use it again.
You could do Life, Real Love.
There you go, perfect.
Rearrange and just keep changing the words around. And then the next one could be Love, Real Life. It's a trilogy.
There you go.
I've given away your secrets. So on it says, includes the one and only. So I'm going to put you on the spot. My posh friends from England said, could you get him to sing a little bit of the song? Could I get you to?
Do you know how many times I'm asked?
You're asked
that song
all the time?
Yeah.
Do you not want to do it?
Oh, no, I'd do it for you, Howard.
Good.
Only because it's you.
No.
I bet
you say that to all the radio hosts.
I do.
I know, but it was such. I actually remember it from the 90s.
Oh, you do?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it was a top 10 hit here in the States.
I remember. Yeah. I was just a child, you know.
So was I. It was actually on the film Doc Hollywood with Michael J. Fox. So a lot of Americans that know the song remember it from that.
Yes. So just a tiny bit of it.
I am the one and only, nobody I'd rather be. I am the one and only, you can't take that away from me.
That's amazing. You know, I really appreciate it. Yes, there's lots of claps going on.
I can hear the
applause
around the whole, even Dr. Drew's.
He's not here today, but he will be very jealous. I know you do a lot of philanthropy work, and so I wonder if you can share that with us. And what inspired you to do it?
Well, I feel like there's when you have any kind of fame, that you have a platform and people actually do listen, you know. And I feel like if you don't utilize it for some kind of good, then you're wasting that opportunity. So, more recently, as time goes on, I feel like I really want to kind of, you know, to just give back and just help and try and, it sounds corny, but like just try and make the world a little bit of a better place if I can. And so.
And it makes you a better person.
And I mean, yeah, it helps me.
I mean, it helps you grow as a human being.
It does. And, you know, and I've experienced some amazing things and met some incredible people through my journey and, you know, with some of these charities. I work with a charity that you mentioned earlier on called A21, which is a charity that helps with human trafficking, mainly sex trafficking. And, you know, I went to Bulgaria on a mission with them. And some of the girls that I met there that had been through these just awful experiences, I mean, it changes you, you know, talking to
people. How did it change you?
I mean, it makes you stop and realize that, you know, basically for a start, that you're doing okay.
There's puts that. Your life in perspective pretty quickly.
It really does. And it also you I defy anyone that meets somebody that's been through something like that not to want to help, not to want to try and kind of, you know, eradicate this, you know, from our world. You know, it's just...
Yeah, I just feel like so many... When I saw that, I thought, I'm just so, in some ways, naive to it. Mm-hmm. And I really shouldn't be. I should take the responsibility of learning more about it.
Well, it's everywhere. That's the thing. It's not, you know, people think, you know, sex trafficking...
It happens somewhere over there.
Yeah, it's like, you know, somewhere in Eastern Europe and these girls are taken to wherever. But no, there are people everywhere. You know, and it's a huge, you know, worldwide epidemic that... I don't have the figures in front of me because I haven't, but if you go to a21.org, I think it is, it's all there, I mean, to see. There's actually a big, I think we're doing...
You're doing a big event in October.
Yeah, the Walk for Freedom, they call it.
Okay.
I'm not very...
Are you going to be walking?
I'm going to do it, for sure,
Good.
I think it's the 18th of October, but as I say, go to the website and you'll find
out. And you'll
out.
Get all the information.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be there.
Oh, good, and you'll be singing the one and only.
Yes.
Do they make you do that everywhere?
To the
go.
Sound of a you know,
do they make you
along.
Do that everywhere you go?
Yes, everywhere I go. Yeah.
Chesney Hawks is going to the bathroom, but he'll be singing in the shower.
We'll be marching to the sound of the one and only.
We have a few minutes left, and I wanted to make sure that you know, my experience has been sometimes people leave the show and they go, you know, I wish I would have had a chance to say this or that or the other. So I'm going to give you that chance. Is there something that you would like to share with us or the audience, a story, some advice, anything that you think is important, especially as where you're at right now in your life?
Well, another thing that's affected me recently quite deeply is I had somebody very close to me commit suicide. Mm. And a young girl I was working with, writing and producing and mentoring, who became very much part of our family. And she was like a sister to my kids. And my wife and I felt very parental over her. And we were very shocked and blown apart as a family with the news of her passing, didn't really understand it. And this is something that I've started working with a lot of charities, you know, with mental health. And through my journey, and gosh, I mean, I'm sure this is something that you deal with all the time with all your clients, and is that I didn't realize how many people were suffering. I had no idea. I'm quite a positive person, and I go through life with, you know, with a positive outlook in life, and, you know, I make music and I entertain people. And, you know, of course I have come across people that have, you know, been depressed, and I had my uncle committed suicide. You know, I've obviously seen that in life, but I had no idea how many people, you know, in general life are going through difficult times. And, you know, my journey now in my philanthropy, you were saying, is very much dedicated towards trying to, you know, help and raise awareness and funds for these charities that help people that just sometimes just need to talk.
Well, I think awareness and talking is so important. You know, even when I started working as a psychologist many years ago, I can remember how difficult it was for me at the beginning, because you get bombarded, especially if you're working full time, with people suffering so much. Mm-hmm. And you don't realize it. Even when you're a student, you don't really realize. Like, you can study something in a book, but then when you go out into the field,
you feel the reality of it.
And you start to feel the reality, how intense it is. It becomes very difficult, and it takes a lot of years to try to figure out how you deal with it on a personal level.
Is it hard to disconnect?
It becomes a skill to disconnect. Mm. And the thought is, I don't think you completely disconnect, but you try to learn how to manage it and take important breaks and have strong boundaries.
Yeah.
And also, because with your training, you're approaching things a little bit differently than when you're dealing with someone who's on a personal level like you had. You're going in there and you're trying to treat it.
Yeah.
So it's a little more objective.
Yeah,
I guess. But still, it affects you.
Of course it does. And it's funny, when I'm going back slightly, when I said I was playing Jesus in Godspell, it was a 150-piece choir, and there was like another 100 people on stage with us. It was a massive cast. And playing Jesus, and I was basically preaching the whole time, through the whole rehearsal experience, I didn't realize that I was taking on, because I was that personality, as Jesus, I was taking on...
Talk about healing. I heard he healed a few people.
Well, apparently he did. Yes. But more importantly, he turned water to wine. Which yes. But no, what I was trying to say is that I took on everybody's nerves and anxiety and I didn't realize I was doing it. I had no idea. And I was just trying to hold everything together, trying to hold, all the people around me together. And I did it subconsciously because maybe I was playing Jesus.
No, that's a really good point. And what you've got to learn, we only have a couple of minutes left, but what I want to say, what you've got to learn and what I think you discovered is you can't always hold it together for everybody.
No, and I totally lost it. But on the last day, when I had to put Jesus aside, I just lost it. I cried. It all came out, and I didn't know what was happening. But then going back into it and talking to my wife, was with me at the time, and she helped me kind of like understand what it was that had happened to me.
And that's what good therapy is really trying to understand. And I bet you grew a lot from that experience.
Definitely did.
And it affected you. Chesney, I wanted to thank you so much for coming on the show. We had so much fun together.
We did.
I can't. You got to just keep putting out albums so I can keep having you back on. Or songs or different versions of the one only.
I've got the musical. I've got the albums. I'll write a book for you. So then
you've got a book for me, but that's my book. And really, it's such a pleasure to have you on. And one of the things I've learned so much from you is how you've been able to take your personal life experiences and transform them into artwork and how they've affected your life. Mm. And that's the message I want to give to our audience out there, that whatever happens to you, if you can find a way to work through it in your life and find the people who can help support you, it's going to make you eventually a stronger person and help you express yourself in certain ways that maybe you didn't even imagine were possible.
Amen.
And absolutely, it takes you on that journey. So, Chesney, best of luck, and hopefully we'll have you back on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Howard.
It's been a pleasure. I'm Dr. G with The Shrink and the Showman, and we'll be back next week.
This show furnished by Key Light Counseling Center.